Herkese selamlar. Uzun bir aradan sonra tekrar karşınızdayız. 15. bölümü güncellemeye karar verdik. Ses problemlerinden ötürü. Çok uzun bir ara verdik. Bu çok uzun aranın da sonraki bölümde sebebini açıklayacağız. Ama bu bölümde biz konuşmayacağız. Jason Langstor konuşacak. Amerika'dan güzel bir konuğumuz var. Jamstack isimli statik web sitesi üreticilerinin nasıl çalıştıklarını ve hem geliştiricilerin hem de girişimcilerin bu statik web sitelerinden nasıl yararlanabileceğini anlatacak. İyi dinlemeler efendim. Haftaya görüşürüz. Welcome to Bibozmo podcast. I know that we speak English right now instead of Turkish, but we have a very cool guest today. And let's introduce our guest to you. And hi, Jason.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I want to pronounce your full name, but I might butcher it, so don't hate me. today, Jason Langstorff is with us.
No, you got it exactly right.
Thank you very much. From United States, if I'm correct, right?
Yep, Portland, Oregon in the United States.
Okay, that's very cool. So actually we are doing this podcast from multiple zones right now. I mean, we have a guest in the United States and we will post this podcast in Turkey. So before we start, would you like to introduce yourself to our fellow Turkish listeners?
Sure. I am a principal developer experience engineer at Netlify. I also run a regular live stream called Learn with Jason, which is an educational show where I pair program with people in the community to learn something new in about 90 minutes. And on top of that, I do a lot of writing and I build things for fun, do a lot of silly code. I really like the Jamstack community, the Gatsby community, and kind of doing fun things in the web space.
Okay, that's perfect. And to be honest, we are actually a indie hacker and entrepreneurship podcast.
But nice.
Especially me are very into Jamstack and those static site generators and everything. And I believe that this is very valuable for small entrepreneurs, especially for those like solopreneurs and that kind of people. And that's why I wanted to talk to you, because I know that you were working in Gatsby before and now you are in Netlify, two of my favorite companies recently. And for those, I wanted to ask you, have you ever done anything related to entrepreneurship or in that area before? Would you like to talk about your past?
Sure, I have. Yeah, I got my start as a musician, and when I was in the band, we were a professional touring band, and I use the word professional lightly because we didn't get paid much. But while we were on the road, we had to do things like promote the show and put up tour videos and updates and all sorts of things that involved design and web and all that stuff. And so we didn't have the money to hire help. And I ended up just kind of by default at first, and then because I enjoyed it, making a lot of those materials. So I designed our posters and our merch and our customized our MySpace page, which was the first time that I really got into code. And that spiraled out until I was building websites. I built our first tour blog. That got me into PHP. That over time spiraled into an agency, which the band didn't make it. We weren't a very good band, but it turns out I felt like I was pretty good as like all the parts of running the band, except actually being a musician, I felt like I was pretty good at. So I would, when the band closed down, I just started an agency and did all the same things that I was doing for my band, but for local businesses instead. And at first I was a solopreneur. I was effectively a consultant, and over time that grew into something where I had subcontractors, a couple full-time employees, and it all got very stressful. So I ended up walking away from that. But I almost always have some kind of side thing going. You know, I built a company. I run my own blog, which is not really monetized, but it has helped me move different monetization things. Like I have a product called Refocus, and that's built around the idea of kind of figuring out what you want to do with, like, if you kind of feel like you're stuck, you're not sure what you should focus on, Refocus is a way to kind of, it's a framework to work through those materials and figure out what you should be doing and then do that thing. So there's a lot of, I'm always doing a little bit of entrepreneurship, whether it's, you know, something really tiny, like I'm about to launch a sticker store, or whether it's something a little more ambitious, like this whole product that I've built and you know, don't market very well.
Well, that's perfect. I mean, to be honest, your experience with the band and all those stuff are quite foreign to Turkish people, because we don't have, I at least around me, we don't have that kind of experiences. So that was very good to hear that kind of stuff. And actually, I have a good point to jump into Jamstack.
Sure.
First, you can explain the Jamstack, and then I would like to hear that. How would you approach those side gigs and things that you did with your band and MySpace or whatever, if you had Jamstack back in your time?
Yeah. So the Jamstack is an approach to web development that focuses on pre-rendered assets. So the idea is that you build things ahead of time, and by building things ahead of time, you're able to save a lot of effort on the like page rendering, on the cost of servers. So what you're ultimately doing with the Jamstack is you're moving toward this model of everything is kind of compiled at build time into static assets, HTML, CSS, JavaScript. And then you put those onto some kind of a content delivery network. Like that's what Netlify is at its core. Is a really high performance like build pipeline and content delivery network. And then you could also put it into like Amazon S3 buckets in CloudFront, or you could put it on like Zeit has a CDN. And so any of those services you can put it out there. And then it's really, if we look at it as like what the philosophical difference is between Jamstack and the other things in the environment, it's not that you're doing different things, it's that you're drawing different boundaries around what your responsibilities are. So a lot of it is in offloading the infrastructure to other places. So you need to run backend logic, but instead of having to provision and configure your own server and then figure out how to scale that, you would use serverless functions where you write the logic, but all of the infrastructure and provisioning and scaling and all that stuff is managed by a host provider. That manages the serverless. And it's the same thing with your CDN. Instead of having to set up the server and configure a you know, Nginx with a Varnish cache or however you want to make all those things work, instead of having to learn all of those things just so that you can make content, you do the content and then you deploy it somewhere that automatically configures and manages that stuff. So it's kind of like the Jamstack is a way for individuals to get access to DevOps professionals and you know, scalability professionals without having to hire them or without having to build those skill sets, because the managed infrastructure does all that for you. So to answer your second question about what I would do today if I was trying to run a band, what I'm seeing right now that I think is really exciting is that the landscape for independent creators is starting to get approachable. And I feel like there was this immediate kind of explosion at the beginning of the web where anybody who wanted to could just open up a text editor and write some HTML and put it up on GeoCities or whatever their preferred like hosting platform was. And it was low barrier to entry, didn't take a, you know, it wasn't expensive. I think GeoCities was free. And then you would just like have a space on the internet that was yours. And that was a really, really cool way to do things. And then over time, things got a little more complicated. We started using more frameworks. We wanted more dynamic stuff. So we introduced PHP. We saw the move from like HTML to DHTML to actual JavaScript. And like, this was, kind of before jQuery. So we started to see things get complicated. jQuery was another renaissance where suddenly everything got a little more accessible. You could do more stuff. But then we started to see the limitations of that as well, because jQuery opened these doors, and we were like, oh, we could make single page JavaScript apps, but jQuery wasn't built for that. So then we saw frameworks, and now all of a sudden there's this really high barrier to entry to building anything. Because it's not just the front end part. It's like, well, now where do you host it? Well, you got to buy hosting, and you need FTP, or you need some way to log in and deploy this, or you've got some kind of a CI CD system. It's like, it's a lot of pieces to make that work, and that just makes it so overwhelming. And what I think is really exciting about tools like Netlify is that there's this focus on saying, hey, you're an independent creator, make a thing, put it here, and it's live. And that feels very much like it's stepping back toward the beginning of the web, where the barrier to entry was low. And so as an independent creator now, I would be really excited to be working in this space, because it would mean, like, I'm not trying to figure out, you know, I spent a lot of time reading through books and trying to understand what different server configs meant or how things affected each other. So being able to do that today and say, all right, I made a cool thing for my band, I want this on the internet, and being able to just like click the button and know that it's going to go live, that is really exciting to me. And we just saw this too, like Eminem, the rap god video, was either just crossed a billion views or was about to cross a billion views, and they launched a Netlify site, and all it is just like a big image, a countdown to like how many plays are left, and the video so that you can watch it. And like, they put this up on Netlify. I imagine that this happened in like a day, you know. It's not like it was and it's a cool site, but it was like, you can see that the barrier to entry has been lowered because people are putting up these like fun projects that would have been like cost prohibitive if it was 5 years ago, because you would have needed to stand up so many different API layers and servers and all this stuff that like they would have been like, ah, it's a cool idea, but we don't have time or budget for that. Whereas now it's like, oh yeah, do that. That'll take us 10 minutes. Let's spin it up. And I really love that shift in the web. And I think the Jamstack is a lot of the driving engine that makes that possible.
That's perfect. These are exact my ideas, actually, that I'm trying to explain everyone around me. I want to go deep down into Jamstack, but before, I actually heard when you were talking about this term called public learning, I think I heard it from this Tech Junior podcast that you have attended before. And would you like to talk about this public learning and how, let's say, novice developers plus entrepreneurs can benefit from it?
Yes. So learn in public is a concept that... It's a philosophy that I've had for a while. It's been made very popular by Sean Wang. He goes by Swix on Twitter. But it predates both of us. Like, it's a concept that we've seen. It's in research and education and all sorts of different areas. And the general idea is that if you're going to learn something, it means that you know something today that you didn't know yesterday. So if you then leave the information for the next person along the way to find, that's giving them an advantage, because it's, you know, you're always writing the post that you wish you had yesterday. I need to do a thing. I can't figure it out. I'm going to have to struggle through this myself. Here's the blog post so that, you know, yesterday me would go, ah, this is exactly what I needed. And there's a part of that that's like, hey, you should pay it forward, right? The web is built on people sharing knowledge. But there's also a selfish benefit to that, which is that if you create content, you are building expertise. You are signaling to everyone on the internet that you are someone who is capable of not only learning, but explaining topics to other people. So as you build that body of work and as you show more and more of your knowledge, that makes it easier for you to sell concepts. Like, I am not any smarter than anybody else on the internet. Compared to a lot of people, I have a mountain of content. And as a result, a lot of times I'll get taken more seriously, even though I might be actively worse at whatever the subject matter is that I'm being compared to somebody on, because they haven't published anything and I have. And so I think that a lot of the learning in public is showing your work. It's very, very difficult for people to appreciate or notice that you are accomplishing things, creating things. And this is internal and external, right? Like if you build a thing and you never show anybody, how can they possibly notice and appreciate it? If you learn something and you don't write it down, does it benefit you? Like, I mean, it kind of does because you'll learn that thing. But there's also just the whole benefit. Like if you learn a thing and you turn around and teach it, you're going to understand it better than if you just read an article, do the thing, and then move on with your life. So it's kind of it's good on all sides. It helps the community. It helps your career. It helps your actual skill set and retention. And all of those things add up to being a significantly larger impact on your ability to accomplish and convince people that you're someone to invest in.
Well, that sounds perfect, but let's think about me. I'm an aspiring front-end dev.
And okay.
I love to use Twitter, and I want to try this public learning stuff. Mm-hmm. I feel overwhelmed when I'm using my skills, when I'm explaining my skills, and what if I get roasted publicly by someone is more knowledgeable than me? And other, you know, that in Twitter, crowd are tend to follow those lynches, let's say, like cyberbullying stuff. How am I supposed to, let's say, ignore those messages when I'm...
So, what I would suggest is like looking at the kind of content that gets roasted, because what I've noticed is that there are multiple ways to deliver information. If you're learning and you deliver that content as I have discovered the best way that will ever exist to solve a problem, and you deliver it as such, people will argue with you. If you say, I am working on a project and I learned this and I'm writing it down for future Googlers, people very rarely argue with that. Like it's a lot of it comes down to the way that you present that information and also what you're trying to accomplish. Like, are you recording information for posterity? Then that's a great thing. And very few people are going to argue that it's harmful for you to say, I learned this, this is what I did, I'm putting this down. I think it's when it crosses over into that kind of preachy nature of like, I have discovered the proper way to do web development and everyone should do it my way or they're not as good. And when you approach it that way, that's when you see the fights break out, because someone will say, you know, if you don't do this, then you're a bad developer. And then everybody says, well, no, you're not, and here's why. And you see the fights break out that way. So I think if you focus on sharing your experience and documenting your learning and not necessarily comparing or adding value judgments, like it the way you did it is a way to do it. There are 1,000 ways to solve any given problem. You found one of them. Here's the documentation. So it's not saying this is the solution. It's not saying it's a better solution. It's not saying I'm smarter than you. It's just saying this is what I've learned. And I've rarely seen those types of posts get attacked. I mean, that is, there's definitely, sometimes you're just going to get attacked. Like there are people who just want to fight. And that does tend to happen a lot more to like women and underrepresented groups, because it's, I don't know why, because people are terrible. But, you know, what I found is that all you can control is your own approach. And so if the approach that you take is to share personal experiences and document for future Googlers, it limits the attack surface. So if somebody wants to be a jerk, they'll find a way to be a jerk. But if you don't give them things to hold on to, it's harder for them. And I've found that they'll tend to go for easier targets, if that makes sense.
Yeah, actually, that's a very smart approach. Thank you very much for sharing. So I am getting back to this Jamstack topic again.
Yes.
And when I'm trying to explain Jamstack around me, my friends, like people I know, even when I try to introduce into my workplace, there are two main questions. The first one is that, does it harm my existing SEO? Second one is, and most of the times I hear that from like the small entrepreneurs and small companies. They say, what are the advantages over WordPress? This is like not Drupal, not Magento, nothing. They just ask, which one is better, WordPress or Jamstack?
Okay. So to answer the first question about SEO, SEO will, it depends on what you do, right? Like you can always break your SEO, but if you are taking a website that is currently powered by, let's say, WordPress, and that WordPress site has a blog, and your blog posts are available at yoursite.com/blog/the name of the post, and you refactor the site to use a Jamstack approach where it's pre-rendered ahead of time, and those URLs are the same, yoursite.com/blog/name of the post, the SEO impact would be positive. You would be, because what will happen is that unless you have a perfectly tuned WordPress site, which there are very few, and we test this regularly to check our assumptions, WordPress sites tend to render more slowly than the average Jamstack site. So what the SEO value would be is that your content that was on WordPress is now being served by a CDN and there is no render step. So it just, it's the same content delivered faster, which Google sees, like Google factors page speed into your SEO. So the faster your pages are, the higher you're gonna rank. So basically, if you're considering moving to the Jamstack, if you don't change your URL structure, there should only be a positive impact. Now I'm saying that with a big asterisk, which is that the Google algorithm is a black box. And if you change content, if you rearrange the markup on your site, if you know any of those things, those are variables that you should do research on, because the way your headings are structured, how accessible your content is, you know, what else is on the page, all of those things will factor your SEO. But if you take the exact same page and you just shift it from a server rendered environment to a Jamstack rendered environment, it will have a positive SEO impact.
That's perfect. So the second question is this WordPress question. What are the advantages? And even if I decide that I want to move, how can I do the shift from WordPress to Jamstack? Let's say with Gatsby.
Absolutely. So WordPress has been evolving as a platform to where now there is a headless version of WordPress or an API version of WordPress. So the benefit of WordPress is that its content editing experience is probably still best in class for a like generalized audience. The average person from anywhere in the world can probably go into WordPress and successfully post anything. I would argue that that is probably not true for the average Jamstack style CMS where you have to write Markdown or use GitHub or things like that. So the editing and the content workflow advantages of WordPress are huge. For all the reasons that I just talked about with speed, and also different reasons like security, like WordPress sites are the most common to be hacked because it's a huge chunk of the internet is powered by WordPress, which means that it's an easy attack target. And if you look at what, like the analytics that we run on Netlify, you'll see that a lot of bots just try to find the wp-admin.php route to see if they can hack your site. So Jamstack removes that attack surface, because what's happening with a Jamstack site is that you're gathering all the data at build time. And then when you serve it, there's no more connection to the server. So there's no server to hack. There's no connection to the database. All that they could do is deface the current HTML and CSS, which you would just upload again to remove that hack, right? So there's a big security benefit there, the speed benefit. The complexity shifts a little bit, where right now the complexity with WordPress is that you have to write blade templates or PHP templates to serve the content, which gets you, it's kind of an extra barrier between the content, the PHP, the markup, and then the end state of the website. So there's a little bit of extra added complexity. When you move to the Jamstack, there's not less complexity, but that complexity gets front loaded. So what ends up happening is you use WordPress as an API and you pull that content into Gatsby. In Gatsby, they've hired Jason Ball, who built WP GraphQL, which is a really powerful plugin that gives you a GraphQL style WordPress API. And then you're able to load all of your WordPress content into Gatsby's data layer. And your development process is now, like, the data is in one place. You write up your templates in React, which is a little more approachable to the to today's front-end devs, I think, than a PHP and kind of hybrid PHP and JavaScript experience. And the end result is that Gatsby will pull that WordPress data down, build a static site, and then you get all those speed and SEO and security and all that stuff. So the migration process is kind of like this initial pain of you have to set up the new site and get the WordPress API configured to use GraphQL. You'd have to figure out what your plugins in WordPress are doing to make sure that they're not, if mission critical parts of your site are powered by plugins, you'd have to figure out how to migrate those over, because a lot of times those won't show up in the GraphQL output. So there's a little bit of a migration path there. Once it's done though, your team, your content team, continues to edit using that wonderful WordPress content editing workflow. And whenever you publish, WordPress fires a webhook that re-triggers if you're using Netlify, Netlify will just re-trigger a new build of the Gatsby site, and that post goes live in a couple of minutes. So it's a very nice workflow. And I like it because it kind of separates the concerns. Your content editing should be the best experience for content editors. Your front-end development should be the best experience for front-end developers. And I think that one of the problems that we've had to make for so long in this industry is we trade off. Either the experience is good for the developers, or the experience is good for, like, the content team. And a lot of times those trade-offs get made at the expense of the end user, where the person who's actually going to load the site has to deal with whatever was more convenient for the developers or the content team. And a lot of times developer versus content is just like, okay, is the CEO like a content marketing person or a developer? And that's who wins that debate, right? So what we're really looking for here is, like, the Jamstack provides this opportunity to let each team choose the best tool for their workflow. So if WordPress is the best content management workflow for the marketing team, they use that. If React and Gatsby is the best tool for the development team, that's good. And then the Jamstack gives you the best chance because of the way the assets are pre-compiled and served at the edge. That gives you the best chance of giving a great user experience. So everybody should win in this migration scenario, whether it's, you know, going all the way from WordPress to Jamstack, where you use like a Markdown CMS if you're a developer, or whether it's a hybrid approach where the WordPress is where the content is handled and Jamstack is how you present that content.
That's perfect. So there is this one thing that frustrates me when it comes to Jamstack, that whenever I look for tutorials or some content, some documentation, mm-hmm. I always see this, let's build a blog with Jamstack. I'm even sick of seeing blog examples, and I even start to think that I think this is the only thing you can build with Jamstack, like blogs. Mm-hmm. So the question is, can I build the next big thing with Jamstack? Like, is there a limitation? Is there a limit of things that I can build with Jamstack?
Not at all. We for example run our swag stores. You can run like Gatsby swag store as a Jamstack app. We're building one at Netlify right now that's a Jamstack app. It kind of pulls data in from Shopify and GitHub and Discourse and a bunch of other disparate apps into a kind of a centralized swag experience. I've seen people build dashboards that are kind of single page JavaScript apps that just talk to backend APIs. Those are totally Jamstack apps. So you can build anything. I actually really, I was advocating when I was working at IBM, I used to be a front-end architect there. I was advocating that should have been a Jamstack app talking to APIs. And I was building proofs of concept to show them how that worked. Because like, if you think about it, the presentation layer of any app is visually presenting information. And then when you click a button, that button is sending off a request. The only difference between Jamstack and a traditional server rendered app is that Jamstack is going to call an API, which would be like, if you're at mysite.com, that API might be api.mysite.com. And like something like a WordPress site would just call another script in the same server. So it's functionally equivalent in terms of how they work. It's just, again, moving those layers of responsibility. Like, how do you keep the backend team in control of the backend and the front end team in control of the front end, and making sure that you don't get these weird mixed like proxy layers where, you know, the front end team didn't want to wait for the backend team to finish a thing, so they wrote this weird little proxy file in the server that kind of like rewraps the API. And like, this was all the stuff that we were seeing done at IBM. And had we switched to a strict Jamstack separation, it would have encouraged that better separation and that better code quality, so that we weren't seeing like, well, it might be done in the proxy, it might be done in the front end, it might be done in the, you know, the API layer, it might be done in the back end behind the API layer. You just have to go ask around until you find where the problem is. And you know, that it helps create clearer separations of concerns and a clearer maintainable surface when you look at how a Jamstack app is architected. You know, again, take all of that with a giant grain of salt, because anybody can make anything terrible with sufficient effort. It's
I understand. So I think we can end up with Jamstack, and I really would love to go into more Gatsby and Netlify.
Sure.
To be honest, I don't want to like differentiate them, since you worked in both of them and you are currently in Netlify. We can actually just go back and forth. And to be honest, I think that they are the best pair of the internet right now. Like, when you pair them, you are the strongest man on the internet. This is how I feel. But my biggest, problem question is that, does Netlify and Gatsby, I drove them, do they offer any documentation in Turkish language or any other language? Because from what I see, I only saw some Spanish documentation and English ones. So how about those, let's say, relatively smaller countries in the tech scene?
So right now, Nat Allinson is doing some really cool work in the Gatsby team to do community-powered documentation. And so I know that there is a process to translate the Gatsby documentation into any language that you want. I do not know if they have a Turkish project underway, but I know that there is absolutely an on-ramp to make that happen if you want to.
So can I get my swag from Gatsby, free swag?
Absolutely, by translating some docs, yeah.
Okay, I like it. I will do that.
And then in the Netlify docs, I don't know that we have translations. Let me look to see. I'm just looking this up right now. To the best of my knowledge, I don't know that we have translations right now. So that's something that I'll take back to the team and see if we have a project.
Okay, actually, before we all talk about Gatsby, I just forgot to ask, can you just shortly explain what's Gatsby and what's Netlify, maybe?
Sure. So Gatsby is a it's a framework on top of a framework, if that makes sense. So Gatsby is a kind of a site building suite of tools that is powered by React, GraphQL, and a few other things. So it's using Webpack under the hood, it's using Relay, it's using React and a handful of other things. So the way that it works is it's a site generator that is powered by the GraphQL layer. And where Gatsby kind of stands apart from most site generators is that at build time, you have this way to kind of aggregate data from any source. And this is something that gets called the content mesh. And so what's nice about this is that, like, in a standard site build, you're probably going to end up needing data from, you know, two or more different services, because that's just the way that the internet's working now. You've got, you know, you're doing sales stuff over here, you need to get customer data, you need to do auth management and products and blogs and all sorts of things. And all of those things have services that are extraordinarily good at doing that. If you're doing products, you probably want to use something like Shopify or Stripe, right? You don't want to try to shoehorn that into WordPress. If you're doing blog content, you probably want to use WordPress or Contentful or something that is kind of like purpose-built for that. If you need custom page types, you know, these really flexible builders like Sanity are great for that. And having to choose one and shoehorn all of your content types, that's not fun. That's kind of what we were talking about earlier, where you're trading off between like which team has the most importance in the company. So what Gatsby enables with this content mesh is the idea that you can take the products from Shopify and the blog from Contentful and the, like, the custom pages from Sanity and the docs from Markdown, and all of that is combined into this unified data layer. And then you build the site by reading all of that content out of this unified data layer. You write plain React for the most part. There are a couple special Gatsby things, but there's a really good tutorial that'll walk you through what the specific Gatsby bits are. And out the other side, you get this very fast, static, you know, enabled offline without JavaScript, mostly accessible by default. They've done a very good job of making a lot of the right things in web development the easy things. Netlify is kind of the, like, if you look at the, you know, the Jamstack as being a sandwich, like, you know, Gatsby would be the jam and Netlify is the peanut butter, or however you want to say that, right? So Netlify is it's a build system and a content delivery system with support for a whole bunch of the extra things that you need. So right now what Gatsby does is it gives you the ability to build a site quickly. You can get a really fast bundle of static assets, but you still have to get those on the internet. You still have to set up the CDN. If you want to handle forms, you need a way to do that. If you want to handle identity and logins, OAuth, you need a way to do that. If you want to handle any serverless functions or you need dynamic content, something that you can run at real time, you need a way to do that. And that's kind of what Netlify does. So at its base, you would hook up a Gatsby repo to Netlify. And whenever that repo changes, Netlify will rebuild and redeploy your site. Then if you want to add serverless, for example, you can put a folder called functions into your repo. And whenever it changes, Netlify will rebuild, deploy the site, and also redeploy these serverless functions that give you dynamic content that you can call on the fly. So if you need to deploy a quick API, serverless functions, you write one file and it's up and running. It also lets you do identity. So if you need to password protect pages, have people sign in, Netlify has a service that will let you do that without having to add a bunch of extra backend stuff. You just inject a script into it, and there's a package for checking whether or not somebody's logged in. Same with forms. If you tag any form on your site with a Netlify data attribute, we will automatically capture any form submissions and put them in your right in your Netlify dashboard, so you can see who's responded to your form. So, you know, that we're kind of looking at what Netlify wants to be is the glue layer for however you want to build your Jamstack sites, because you can build Gatsby sites on there. You can do, like, Next compiles to static now, so you can deploy Next sites. You can deploy Hugo or Jekyll or Gridsome or Nuxt or whatever you're feeling, whatever your preferred flavor is. As long as it has an option to compile to static sites or to static assets, you can deploy those through Netlify, and we'll automate a lot of that process so that you just get to, like, make a change, commit it to GitHub, and as soon as it hits, we'll rebuild it and auto deploy it.
Okay, that's perfect. I know that Netlify has a very generous free plan,
mm-hmm.
as far as I know, but I don't know like all the technical details. I don't understand all those technical stuff. So let's say I have a website,
mm-hmm.
a platform, which gets 100,000 to 300,000 traffic per month. How much do I have to pay to Netlify for that kind of traffic?
So the way that Netlify works right now is we have, as you said, a really generous free tier. My site is super, well, not super popular, but it gets a decent amount of traffic, and I know that it still falls inside the free tier. So I'm just pulling up the specifics. We have a cap on how much free bandwidth you get. So you get 100 gigabits or gigabytes of bandwidth, and then you also get, I think it's build minutes. So like the caps that we put on for the free tier, they're not even necessarily hard caps. It's like we say you can transfer up to 100 gigabytes for free, which is quite a bit. Like unless I don't even get close to that on my site. So unless you're like giving people big assets or doing something kind of unoptimized, there's a good chance that even with high traffic, you won't get too close to 100 gigabytes. And then with the build minutes, there are ways to optimize your builds. And really, if you think about that, that means that if your site builds like for 10 minutes a day, it'll be free. And so the average site doesn't rebuild that many times. You know, it's when you get into much more high frequency sites, so like content sites, and by that point your sites are making money, right? So it makes a little more sense to pay for the services. So that's kind of the way that Netlify looks at it. It's like the average developer, the average site is probably not going to cross out of the free tier, even if you have a big like influx of traffic, like you hit the front page of Hacker News or something. And the other thing too is like, we're not gonna, you don't have to put a credit card in to start or anything. So we're not gonna surprise bill you. You're not gonna get like slammed with a bunch of fees. It's more designed to be like, once you cross the threshold, we will then talk to you about how you, like, are you making enough money off of this site that it's worth going up, or should we figure out ways for you to limit what's happening on your site so that you don't have to pay?
So you're not shutting my website down? Like,
no, we would never shut your website down.
That's amazing. And how about those other services you're offering, like the form submissions, the serverless functions, all those stuff are, like, can I use them in the free tier or?
Yes, they all start free. The form submissions have a number of free submissions per month that I don't remember off the top of my head. The functions have an amount of execution time, which is pretty generous. Identity is free. There are features of identity that are a little more advanced that you do have to pay for. And I'm trying to think if there's anything else that... the only thing that we offer that is not in the free tier is analytics. If you want our analytics, which the good thing about our analytics is that they don't add scripts to your site. We're reading directly from the CDN, so we know what was requested without having to inject any scripts into your site. So it's a really high performance way to get analytics. But we do charge for that. So that's $9 a month if you want to add that to your site. If you don't want to add that to your site, you can always add Google Analytics to a Jamstack site, and that doesn't cost anything.
Okay, so maybe you are not the perfect person to ask this question, but I will ask anyway. What are the differences between this site now? Because I feel that right now there are those two behemoths in the static site deploy places. I don't know how to explain this. So this is Zeit Now and Netlify. This is what I'm here. And what are the differences that, in what circumstances that I should choose either of them?
So I think I should caveat this by saying that Zeit has made a lot of improvements to their platform that I haven't seen. So my prior experience with Zeit and the Now platform was that it was highly optimized for like the Next.js kind of serverless and server-side rendering environment, which is like, they're so good at it. The Zeit platform is great. What Netlify, where I can see the difference is almost just in philosophical leanings, if that makes any sense, where Netlify is very dedicated to the idea of pre-rendered static assets with serverless functions for lab updates. And I think that Zeit has a little more of a leaning toward like server-side rendering and kind of like that stuff as a primary approach. And now again, I don't know that for sure, but that's my impression from the marketing that I've seen is that they're kind of what makes Zeit powerful is the server-side rendering features and support that they have. Whereas Netlify is more of a mind that you can find ways to deliver static assets that give you all the benefits without the complexity of having to do servers, if that makes sense.
Okay, yeah, I think I understand now. And that also answered my potential question between, let's say, Next.js and Gatsby.
Mm-hmm.
Box, I guess, like one of them does like SSR and the...
Yeah, I mean...
Explain in depth, yeah. How does it work? Like Next.js versus Gatsby or Nuxt? I heard that there's this...
So SSR is a complicated term because what it originally meant was that you would host a version of a JavaScript framework on a server, and whenever there was a request made to the server would render that page on the server and then serve it, the same way that PHP does. So when you request a PHP page, it builds the markup and delivers that to the browser. And server-side rendering in React and other modern JavaScript frameworks has kind of been the same idea. It started with, well, if the server makes a request comes into the server will execute the JavaScript framework and return markup to the browser. If I remember correctly, I think Next was the first one that I remember going big with this, where it was like it was their claim to fame. They'd done it really well. It was a super powerful solution. And what server-side rendering has evolved into is more of how do JavaScript frameworks operate in a browserless environment? So when they're not being operated in a browser, does the framework support that? Because Gatsby is doing what is traditionally called server-side rendering, but what it really is like a build pre-rendering, build time rendering, or, you know, like I feel like there's a certain amount of argument for us like coming up with new terms for this, for like build time rendering, BTR, or like request time rendering, RTR. That's the first time I've ever said that in public, so it's not like a thing that anybody should know. But because they're two very, very similar, both built off of the original SSR concepts, but they're two different things, because a build time render is once before this goes on a server or before it goes on a CDN, we're going to gather up the assets and build final assets. A request time render is like if you need to do personalization on the page, if you need to like customize things or do like feature flagging and stuff, there are a lot of really valid reasons for that. And that's when it starts to make a little bit of sense right now to do the hosted kind of Next sort of thing, because you can make those request time renders a little more flexible than a build time render, because a build time is necessarily one to many. You build it once, you serve it to everybody. And any of the things you would want to do for personalization and that sort of thing would require a serverless call after you've loaded the asset, which is 100% acceptable, by the way. It just kind of becomes this trade-off of like, where are you willing to wait a little longer for the page to get rendered so that it comes down completely personalized? Or do you want to show the page with kind of a skeleton placeholder for the thing that you need to customize while the serverless function completes? And in both cases, you get the same result. It's just a philosophical difference. Where does the complexity come in? What does your team prefer? What is the understanding of your organization across those different technologies? And like, where are people going to fall into cracks? And you know, that's kind of what has led me more toward it's why I work at Netlify, right? It's because I'm a big fan of this idea of eliminating that complexity at the execution time so that serverless functions are the only way that logic really happens, because then it just limits that surface area. You're thinking in the context of serverless functions. It's not like serverless functions or maybe on the server or maybe somewhere else. It's very much like, well, these are static. This is what you, like, you get what you get with this. And if you need to do something special, you're going to make this kind of call and it works exactly like this every time. And that to me is a little more, I prefer that mental model. That's my preference.
Okay. I must say that in past, let's say 50 minutes, you completely sold me this Jamstack. You get me? I'm completely done. I when I close my this podcast, I'm going to Gatsby. I will build something. But there is this question. Let's say I get profitable, but I'm still in Turkey. I'm still in Eastern Europe. I'm still in, let's say, less economically strong country. Trying to do something with Netlify and Gatsby. And when I see your prices, not your prices, but when I see the price tags on Netlify or Gatsby Premium, like Gatsby.com, because it sounds very interesting and very promising, I want to use it. But when I see the price tag, I'm kind of hesitant because I have to multiply that number with 6 in my country. When I see the end result, I'm not very happy. So that's the question. Does Netlify, I don't know if you know anything about Gatsby at the moment, but do they think about offering some localized price tags for other countries like Turkey or India or maybe China or Eastern Europe? Do you have any knowledge or information about it?
So I can't make any type of statement about that because that's not the team that I'm on. What I will say is that it's a good idea. And so I will raise that to the team. But to the best of my knowledge, that's not something that we offer. So I will, I can't make any comment, but I will bring that up.
Okay, that's good. I got this promise from you. I am waiting for you to come up with the good news. So we covered all the technical stuff, I suppose. I understand most of the things that you were talking about, let's say. But most of our audience are semi-technical people who are trying to establish their websites with either no-code tools or they are using WordPress with plugins and all those stuff. So the question is, can I still use Gatsby at plus Netlify combo or, I don't know, other static site generator plus Netlify or Zite combo without knowing any programming?
You can. There are a number of Gatsby themes that are available that are kind of pre-built plug-and-play kind of sites. And Netlify has something called the Netlify CMS that gives you a WordPress-like editing experience. Now, it's not as full-featured. It doesn't have all the plugins or anything. But for writing content, it gives you an interface. You would likely need... Some themes will come prepackaged with that. So there's some options for just like one-click deploy. It's up and running and you just do the thing. Many of those would require a little bit of programming to configure and then no programming to operate.
Okay, that's perfect. I also heard something called Gatsby themes. But when I think about themes in WordPress, these are like very... full package stuff, but I think in Gatsby that doesn't work like this. And as a person who is not English native, it's kind of hard to understand. Can you just shortly explain what's that?
So I actually don't know. Gatsby Teams is something that happened after I left the company, so I'm not 100% sure what the details are about.
Okay, thank you very much. So last question: as a aspiring developer or newbie, can I actually learn how to program only with Gatsby, let's say? Can I start to learn programming with Gatsby?
Yeah, I think so. I think the trade-offs that you'll see are that Gatsby uses a lot of technology. And so along the way, you're going to learn how to build a website if you go through Gatsby tutorials and those sorts of things. I think the part that might get a little bit tricky is that because Gatsby is built on different technologies, it might not be apparent what is Gatsby versus what is React versus what is GraphQL. And that's not a problem it only becomes a problem when you're trying to find, like if you're trying to figure out what to Google, because it might not be that it's a Gatsby thing, it might be a React thing. So if you say, you know, Gatsby error this, you might not get any results. So I think I think that Gatsby is an excellent learning tool because it creates a really good environment where you're able to get started quickly, play with it, and then immediately see the results. It's not a bunch of tweaking configurations or trying to figure out how to deploy it. You just, you know, you run the Gatsby CLI and then you hit Gatsby develop and you're immediately looking at a website. If you make a change, you see that change live. So that part is really, really nice for learning because you can just try something and see if it breaks. And if it breaks, then you just, you know, change it back, refresh the page, and you're good to go. I think that it will be a really, really nice initial learning journey. I think that as you go further, you might see that you have to do some different types of independent study to go deeper into different categories so that you feel more confident with like what each of those pieces does and why.
Okay. That's quite smart, let's say. Okay. So that's perfect, Jason. And I think we are done for today. I asked all my questions in a random manner. But I would like to hear what are you up to recently? Like, what do you do? I know that you do Twitch, which is quite interesting in, let's say, dev scene. I don't know many people who does Twitch or live programming. And what else you are up to recently? Can you explain that?
So the live stream is a very, it started as an experiment and it's turned into one of the things that I love the most. It's very odd to realize that somehow my career has led me to be what I lovingly refer to as the host of an internet TV show.
and that sounds amazing, you know?
Yeah, it sounds ridiculous to me, but it's super fun. So that's a thing that I do a lot of. I also professionally, I am trying to be good about not overextending myself. So I make a lot of educational materials, but I tend to focus on making educational materials that align with what I'm doing for work. So a good example of this is like if I do a live stream and that live stream is about, let's say, Svelte, then what I'd want to do is take what I learned from that Svelte live stream and write a blog post about it. And then if that blog post is successful, take that blog material and turn it into a course. And that course is something that I can put up on Egghead, or if I want to do a full-on workshop, maybe I talk to front-end masters or, you know, do it at a conference or something. But the idea is to always try to be reusing different concepts, because if something is successful, then it makes sense to do it in multiple ways. You know, that's the, I think that you, my biggest entrepreneurship life hack that I've found has been this idea of multi-leveraging work. For every hour of work that you do, try to get 5 or 6 hours of return out of it. And so that's a lot of what I do with my time these days is try to figure out ways that something that I've done that I feel was successful could be used in a way that would be similarly successful in a different medium. And then outside of work stuff, I'm a big fan of like cooking and community things. So we are big fans of getting large groups together and cooking dinner together, just doing like big community meet and greets. I run a group with another developer in Portland, Kyle Shevlin, who we call it Food with Friends. And we just send out an email to anyone who wants to get on the list and set a date and time, and anybody who shows up, we just like have some food, have some drinks, and talk. It's really fun. And so I'm a big fan of that. Like food and people are two of my main hobbies outside of work.
That's cool. I know that you had this framework on food, like you can divide all food into three.
Yes. Yeah. All food can be turned into either a soup, a salad, or a sandwich. That is incontrovertible. That is just fact. It's science.
Yeah. Well, I mean, as a fellow Turkish guy, I mean, I still can't fit kebab in anywhere, but.
But it depends on how you do the kebab, right? If you do the kebab wrap, it's a sandwich. If you do the kebab on a plate, it's a salad.
Okay, I like this. I will check this. I will keep this differentiation in my mind, and I won't look the same. All the food will be different for me from now on. So, as a last section, would you like to tell that how our audience or Turkish people can reach you or follow you?
Yes. So I am on Twitter. My Twitter handle is Jay Langsdorf. I am on learnwithjason.dev. If you want to get notifications about the show, the show is on Twitter at LWJ Show. I also run a blog that is more about entrepreneurship and productivity that is on my personal site, langsdorf.com. Those are probably the biggest places. That's where I'm most active.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much, Jason, for joining us today. You were our first guest actually in this podcast, and I'm quite happy to have you because I was kind of, let's say, fun because I learned your Gatsby courses on like front-end masters and stuff.
Oh, cool. Very cool.
Yeah, those are very cool stuff. Like, I felt I'm really doing that stuff like along with you, but still that...
Ooh, I have a new one coming out. This week, I think, the Intro to Jamstack course is going to drop on Front-End Masters.
Front-End Masters?
Yeah.
And my subscription just ended like yesterday.
Oh, no!
Well, now I have a reason to re-subscribe the platform. That's perfect. Thank you very much for this intel. So thank you very much again for joining us today, and have a good day.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me.